Show.
That's my open?
That's what they used to call me, Swivel Hit Bradford.
That's my open. I'm okay. Waiting for you to justify your stupid opinion.
Bradfo Show.
That's delicious.
Not how we wanted to have the 100th episode of the Bradfo Show, but I guess it's good in the sense that we are able to honor a great man, and that great man was Nick Cafardo. We are going to go around the horn here with some people who knew him best, and that's Sean McAdam, Jimmy Golan, Ian Brown. And, you know, guys, I just start with the fact I know that a lot of people are going through their memories of Nick and the originations of their relationships. I'll just start with this. I'm going to say the other day, I watched him interview Steve Pierce. And when I'm watching him interview Steve Pierce, I'm thinking, man, like, that is pure Nick. Like, how he's getting Steve Pierce to engage, how he's getting great answers from him. I'm looking at him from across the clubhouse, how he had that conversational way about him. I talked to a manager last night, and he said, you know, Nick was just great about massaging information out of you, right? And I thought that was such a great way to say it. But that was my last image of Nick as a professional, and I think it was just so perfect. But you guys, I'll just let you go about, you know, where you if you want to have your stories, if you want to have your memories, if you want to, anything you want to do with Nick Cafardo, that's fine with me. Sean?
Thanks, Rob. It's an honor it was an honor to be a good friend of Nick's for a long time. For the 31 years that I've covered the Red Sox, Nick was there for all but a handful, except for the stretch where he went to the Patriots beat. Like all of us, we spent an incredible amount of time together. The cliche that you hear from ball players and people in the game is, we spend more time with our coworkers sometimes than our actual family, and that was true of me and Nick because, it's a long season from spring training through the postseason, and you're sharing cabs and flights and in the same hotels and in the same press box and having dinner together. And two things about Nick. One was his work ethic, and the other was his humanity. He seldom took a day off. He was here for all of spring training, didn't leave, didn't go home, and did the vast, vast majority of the 162 games. He seemed tireless at times. He may have been 62, it was not anything that slowed him down. He still had the same appetite for the job and the same love for the game as he did when I met him better than 30 years ago. I remember one of the first road trips I ever took back in 1989. Nick had been on the beat for a few years. He was still working for the Patriot Ledger at the time. I knew him a little bit socially, but not a whole lot. And as many who just start on the beat were, I was green, naive, didn't know what the hell I was doing. And one day in Chicago in the press box at the old Comiskey Park, he tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Step into my office." And I went into the back of the press box, and he tipped me off about something that was going on, I think with Oil Can Boyd, if you can imagine that, something going on with Oil Can Boyd, and said that Oil Can was going to be suspended or taken out of the rotation or going home or something. And it was a small act of kindness that I never forgot. It was certainly something that doesn't happen often here, where you share information of a story that you have by yourself with some newcomer who didn't even know what was going on at the time. And to me, that was a huge window into who Nick was. He was not about, having the story by himself all the time. He was totally selfless, and he was looking out for somebody who didn't know any better in his first weeks on the job. And that was one of my first remembrances of Nick, but it remains one of my last. And and I just know the pride that he took in his family and his children. The glow he had when he spoke about his grandchildren. He and I I were talking recently. My daughter's expecting my first grandchild in a few weeks, and Nick was telling me how much I was going to love being a grandparent. And, you know, the really sad thing is here, as Steve Buckley and I had dinner last night, and Buck at one point said, you know, Nick should have had 20 more years with his grandkids. And it's just a shame that that's not the case. We will miss Nick greatly, and so will readers. He was a constant, unyielding, steadying force on the beat, and it was my privilege to be his colleague and good friend.
Thanks so much, Sean. And, you know, there's so many things that we are talking about, Nick, and in a second, Jimmy Golan, the Associated Press, is here as well. He's known Nick forever. But you talk about going to dinner with Buck last night, and I think when we went to dinner, when all we had dinner last night, we're looking at Twitter, we're looking at social media, it was incredible. It was insane how, number one, the amount of people throughout the world, throughout baseball the world, were reacting and reflecting, but also how consistent the theme was, which was the nicest guy, the guy who had no enemies, the guy, as you said, Sean, will do anything for anybody. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and that's a great legacy to have, Rob. You know, we can all take pride in our work and hope to break stories and have things exclusively, but in the end, that's not how you're judged or remembered. Your legacy is who you are as a human being. And I got a text from somebody in the industry this morning that just said, "What an outpouring!" That's all the text message said. I knew exactly what he meant. I knew exactly what he was referring to, and I sent a quick message back. I said, "Not surprising. There was no one who didn't like Nick Cafardo. He was truly a man without." Never mind enemies, even people who just, you know, didn't like him. Those people didn't exist. You may not have known him as well as some of us did, but the respect that people had for him was universal, and so was the respect for him as a person and his, you know, his unique brand of kindness and selflessness.
All right, Jimmy Golan, you've known him for a long, long time. I'm glad you're here because you're one of the people I know that when I first started to get to know Nick, that was around, you know, mid-90s, and you were around a lot. It's tough that you are here in spring training, but I guess it's good that you're here to reflect on some of your memories.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to follow up with what Sean said, which is, and this won't come as a surprise to people who are listening to this, but a lot of sports writers are assholes, and you know, there's a lot of backstabbing and people talking about each other in the press box, and you know, Nick was there's nobody who didn't like Nick, and you know, the stories, you know, when someone dies, you hear outpouring of you know, nice comments and affection for them, but it's all really genuine in this case, because There's just no way you could not like him. He was friendly, and you hear stories from young people on the beat. I started, I think, the same year as you, Rob, in 1995, and you know, Nick was, you know, kind of, you know, took everyone under their wing, under his wing, and helped them out and things like that. And you know, whether it's in the clubhouse pointing you to a player who might be good for a story, or you know, just, you know, having dinner when you're down there for the first time and you don't know what's going on, but it's just impossible not to like him, and I think that's why he was such a great reporter too, is because that when players talked to him, it wasn't like, you know, you were digging, he was digging for dirt, or he was, you know, trying to cause trouble or anything like that. He would just, you know, chat with them, and eventually he would come away with a story. And, you know, back when I started, and you know, the Globe and the Herald would fly down their hard copies of their newspaper to newspaper boxes outside the ballpark. And the only way you would know if someone had something that you didn't have is you would go buy the put your quarter in the machine, a quarter probably, and buy the paper and say, oh, you know, Nick had this, and I now have to spend my day chasing something Nick had, and there was always something because he was always he was always on top of the story, and I think those two things are related, that because he was just such a genuine, nice guy, the players took to him, his colleagues took to him, and the readers obviously have taken to him, as we've seen, you know, the past day.
Thanks, Jimmy. Ian Brown, you've been around him a long time as well. I mean, the guy who's probably covering the team in many days in the last decade and a half than anybody, and as we point out, Nick is a guy who was always around, including yesterday when he didn't have to be around, and because he loved being at the ballpark and he loved being here. So Ian, just some of your thoughts on Nick.
Yeah, it's actually kind of unique how I first became to know of Nick. My very first job was as a paper boy, delivering the Patriot Ledger. I was about 12 years old, and when I was walking down this mile street delivering these papers, I would open one of them up and flip open the sports page, and Nick was the Red Sox beat writer at the time, and just would read him every day. And so I kind of felt like I knew him, even though I didn't, loved his work. And that was kind of when I started to kind of want to become a sports writer, just kind of reading him and reading the guys in the Globe and everything. And then in 92, I moved a little bit above paperboy status, and I got a co-op at the Boston Globe. I was a student at Northeastern at the time, what we call Nighthawk, coffee boy, pretty low on the totem pole there. But, you know, you'd see some of the writers in the office, and Nick was there quite a bit and couldn't have been any nicer. And that kind of struck me at the time was, you know, a lot of the people just don't really talk to, like, the interns much at all. But Nick was super friendly. Like, he treated you like almost like a peer. And then, 10 years later, when I started covering the Red Sox, just to be able to be around him all the time and just to see what kind of guy he was. And he was there all the time. Like, I can't remember more than, like, I took days off, but I can't remember more than 4 or 5 days when I covered the Red Sox when Nick wasn't there. He was always there. And his demeanor never changed. Like, I literally can't remember him ever, like, raising his voice. You know, like, he's just so low-key and smooth and, like, sure of himself and sure of what he was doing. But I remember early on in my time covering the Red Sox, you know, he just came up to me one time and he said, oh, just so you know, you do a great job. And, like, I was kind of blown away by that. It really meant a lot that he kind of took the time to do that. It was kind of strangely fitting, you know, that yesterday was his day off because, you know, this is where he was going to be when it finally happened for him, because this is where he always was, you know, aside from when he was with his family, his grandkids, his kids, his wife, this is where he was at the ballpark. And we'd be on a super long road trip. Most of us would probably take the first day off after the trip, and you'd get there, and Nick, he might look a little tired, but he'd be sitting outside the cafeteria there where he always liked to sit on the couch out there. He'd just be talking and watching the game on TV and talking to Steve, and he just loved so much, you know, being around Fenway. And I was thinking last night it was going to be tough to come here today, just knowing that he wasn't going to be here. But at the same time, you're like, well, you have to go because this is where he wanted to be, and this is how you're honoring him by just keep coming to the ballpark every day, because that was what he did, and he set such a great example. And talk about a lot of players are this or that. Nick liked, like, all these guys, like, dating back to when he covered the Patriots. Like, Terry Glenn was a guy that, nobody liked. Nick was like, oh, great guy. You know, Jose Canseco, great guy. It's just like Nick kind of saw, the good in everybody, and just could, because everybody was nice to him. And that was, I thought that was a cool thing. But, it's gonna be strange around here for a long time without him.
Well, I'll, thanks all to all you guys, and I'll just finish off with, I began with my last image of him, Nick, working. I'll go back to a lot of my first experience with him, and it was bizarre. It was sort of embarrassing, which was he was doing the Tom Glavine book, and I asked to transcribe his tapes. And the reason I wanted to do that was because number one, I wanted to sort of get to know like how the process worked, but also I thought it was cool to do something for Nick Cafardo. I mean, I thought it was cool to do something for this guy that, like Ian was saying, you sort of, you seen from afar, and he was so nice and so genuine and treated me so well. And that was sort of the jumping off point. And I think a common theme throughout was that he treated everybody. It didn't matter who you were. He treated everybody like you were somebody. And I was doing freelance stories throughout the 90s, and he took great interest in that. And he treated me like anybody else. And this was, and I'll never forget it. And also, it's funny, Ian, you said the demeanor. I think that's a big part of this, too. The demeanor is so incredible. His demeanor is so incredible considering our industry and how many times that we want to blow off the handle. And he never, ever did. It was just such a microcosm of what a great guy he was and how he just stayed true to being Nick Cafaro the entire time. Well, guys, I know it's a tough day, but I really appreciate you taking some time and thanks for all your thoughts on Nick.